Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Rangers Review Morning Briefing. It's Thursday, the 2nd of May. I'm Derek Clark, and I'm joined this morning fresh from visiting Hampden last night as the young Rangers side were victorious against Aberdeen in the Scottish Youth Cup final. Joshua Barry joins us. How's it going, Joshua?
Yeah, going well, Derek. Good game. Enjoyed it. Thought Rangers probably edged it over the course. I'm looking forward to getting into it and much more this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we talk all things Rangers, you know the drill by now, folks. Just a quick word for our podcast sponsors. MPH Boilers have got those wonderful Viessmann boilers on offer. You get flexible finance options. You get a free internet controller, which is good for all you gadget guys out there. And you also get a free service for the first year as well. The all-important links are in the description below. Do go and check them out if your boiler is on its last legs. Right, plenty to talk about, Joshua. We'll talk about the game last night. First of all, great result for the youngsters. Seen some of it. A bit of talent on show there. Rangers defeating Aberdeen at Hampden to retain the Scottish Youth Cup trophy. Stevie Smith, you had a great interview with him on the website yesterday morning. I'd urge you to go and check it out, folks. I thought it was interesting. We've seen James Tavernier in attendance last night and Philip Lamont, and he paid a visit to the dressing room, the victorious dressing room afterwards. What were your main takeaways from the game, Joshua? Was there some players that stood out more than others?
Yeah, well, firstly, Clement did. It was just something that Smith, Stevie Smith, mentioned to us when we were speaking to him post-match, said that he knew he was coming to the game. The whole first-team coaching staff were there, as was James Tavernier, as you mentioned. But Smith said that they kind of got the message on the pitch that his boys were to go back in because Clement was going to speak to him. So it was a nice touch. Smith himself said it, you know, credit to him, shows kind of who he is, that he would come down and do that. Something that probably should be the norm, maybe isn't. And I'm sure something that, you know, a lot of those young players will go and have professional careers. Some might not. Smith himself said that this will be one of the biggest games of their career, maybe the biggest game of their career for a number of those players. So a nice extra touch and something I'm sure they will remember. In terms of the game overall, Derek, I mean, we're going to discuss it in a little bit more detail, I think, on a members video today. I'm sure a lot of people watched it. I thought the Rangers over the course deserved it. Smith said that in the first half, technically, they were probably the better side, and in the second half, they needed the character. He said pre-match that it would be the side who won would be the team who responded best to mistakes. And I thought in the end, his team kind of epitomised that, because Rangers went behind after Aberdeen, had a good spell in the game, and I think they deserved to take the lead within that kind of 10-minute spell. They had a lot of corners at the front post that are pretty dangerous. Mason Munn, I know we'll come on to speak about him, generally dealt with him pretty well because that was a good delivery. It's easy to say that, you know, Rangers looked vulnerable to that type of corner, but I think a lot of that has to do with the type of whip delivery that the Aberdeen captain was getting on the ball. Aberdeen take the lead, but Rangers then went and restored parity quite quickly after that. And then obviously we're in the lead about 10 minutes after that. I thought Paul and Seal in the first half was bright, played a part in winning the penalty. Archie Stevens, who obviously is a name that people probably be familiar with in the youth setup, he stood out as well. Josh Gentles did well up top. Probably should have, when he went through in the goalkeeper, had a little bit more than the referee gave him for that incident, to put it mildly. Mason Munn as well, the obvious standout in goal. So over the course, I think Rangers deserved to win it. Youth football, again, Stevie Smith said this to me in the lead up to the game, Rangers had actually only won that trophy 8 times before heading into last night, and obviously they lost in the final last season. They won it 2 seasons ago. So youth football is unpredictable. It's not always a given at that level that one half of the Old Firm will win the trophy. But yeah, over the course, I think Rangers deserved it. I'm sure a lot of people will have enjoyed watching on last night and seeing maybe a little bit of what the future holds.
Yeah, they regained the trophy, not retained, as I said earlier on. But Mason Munn coming in for a lot of plaudits, and quite rightly so. Speaking afterwards, he says, "It's obviously a proud moment for myself and my family who are watching. It's like scoring a goal as a goalkeeper to make such a big save like I did towards the end. It was great to make a couple of good saves because it meant a lot to the team." So, yeah, fantastic achievement from the young lads, and well done to Stevie Smith as well. You always like to see Rangers teams winning. A few comments come in saying well done to the women's team as well. Yeah, they defeated Hearts last night also, so well done to Joe Potter and the women's team also. Let's move on to a story on the website, a great feature piece from Chris Jack Joshua, that Chris has spoken to Alex McLeish, Lee McCulloch and Phil Hallander on John Souter charting his rise in his career all the way to Ibrox. Phil Hallander speaking about his ex-teammate, of course, and how he's struggled with injury as he did at Ibrox, but I thought was very intriguing stuff from all three, incidentally, on John Souter. He's someone that's came into the side, had a sort of injury hit season last season, it's fair to say, but he came in and Joshua's just nipped away, but we'll carry on regardless anyway. Listen, it was a fantastic piece. I'd urge you to go and check it out. The description is in the link before, so do, the link is in the description below, so do go and check it out. And McLeish, some of the comments that he said on Souter, of course, who he coached at Scotland. He says, what I liked about John in my initial spying missions and watching him on videos, I thought that he was a really assertive passer. I liked that straight away. One thing that Fergie always said to the Aberdeen players was that he wanted quick, high-tempo football. You had to be assertive. You had to pass it as if you meant it. John had that. At that time, he was still young. He didn't have all the answers. Even today, he'll make mistakes and he'll come up against challenging opponents throughout the rest of his career. Unfortunately, got sent off in the Israel game. It was the experimental start of a new era, and John was involved in that. We like the cut of his jib as a young guy. And let's hope that Souter is part of, I'm sure he will be part of the Scotland squad at the Euros in the summer. Good to have Joshua back alongside me. Good piece. It's okay. It was just a good piece we were just saying there. Lots of comments come in just off the back of it. He has come in for a bit of criticism of late. I think he has looked a tad ropey. We need to understand he is playing over on that left-hand side and he has been for quite some time now, Joshua, but I think he and Balogun will be the central defensive partnership on Sunday and probably going forward unless Connor Goldson makes his way back in there. But interesting to hear what his former manager, teammate and Lee McCulloch had to say about him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, encourage people to check out the piece. This is the type of thing that we do with a lot of players, and it hopefully gives people a little bit more insight into how a player has got to where they are, a bit about their journey, some of the people that have played a part in their journey and played a part in forming them into the player they are today. So, you know, ex-Scotland manager, former Hearts coach, and Phil Hallander, who knows a thing or two about playing at centre-half and obviously spent a long time on the treatment table with John Souter as well. So a great read by Chris, which gives a bit of insight into the player. I agree with you that first and foremost, you've got to remember that Souter playing the fifth highest number of minutes for Rangers in the league this season. If you'd said that last season, people would have laughed at you because he obviously came to Rangers with so many injury difficulties. And I actually think something you probably need to give. I remember, and Chris has this in his piece, if you think back to the Rangers AGM in 2023, Ross Wilson was quizzed about the signing of Souter and he said that he thought Rangers could fix Souter's injury issues, which at that time, after Souter had started in the opening day of the season against Livingston and struggled a lot up against Joel Newbley, I think in hindsight, and it's mentioned in the piece, Derek, he actually played through an injury on that day. But the thought of fixing his injury issues felt very far away back then, whereas now he's one of Clermont's four or five players alongside Tavernier, Lundstrom, Bolton and Butland who can play, you know, every 3 days. And I think that is worth mentioning. Does he struggle more on the left-hand side than the right-hand side? Absolutely. You can trace it back to his first appearance for Rangers to show that. Does he have strengths as a defender? Yeah. Listen, I think in the summer, Derek, Rangers probably need to restructure their centre-back area. You know,
I need two centre-backs.
Yeah. I mean, we speak about their squad building a lot and why they are where they are now, but you spent £4 million on a central defender, or up to £4 million on a central defender a couple of seasons ago, who is now not in the picture. Liam Balogun came back to the club and has done well, but obviously he's 36. He's not going to be a long-term answer. Connor Goldson, for the first time in his Rangers career, has dropped out, and we can come on to discuss whether he's going to come back into the fold. Expect Souter to still be around. Don't expect him to be the first choice left centre-half next season. I agree with you that because he's an aggressive defender, And because he's often stepping out on that wrong side, that can lead to errors, the ball getting stuck under his feet. We've seen that at Kilmarnock a couple of times this season. But there's a chance by the end of the year that he'll actually have played more than any other Rangers centre-back over the course of the league campaign. Rangers still do have the best defensive record. It's important to remember that's not been great in the last two or three months. As we've discussed, I think a lot of that has to do with not just the back four, Derek, but the overall team structure and how they keep pressure in the opposition final third and why they conceded so many counter-attacks in a game like that Ross County game. But yeah, some really interesting insight into Suter from people who know his game really well, and people can go and read it at some point today.
Yeah, interesting points coming in just off the back of that. First of all, a big welcome to Ewan Chalmers, who's joined up to the Rangers Review Extra Channel. Says, morning all, new subscriber from sunny Lytham on the Lancashire Riviera, nice part of the world that is. A great show, keep up the good work. Thank you for your kind words, Ewan, and welcome aboard. Lewis, with an interesting point, says that if Balogun and Suter remain fit and don't get any suspensions, he thinks that's the last we've seen of Goldson. Don't think so. I think we will see him at some point. Remember, I think he's got another 2 years of his deal left. Yeah. Johnny was speaking about him yesterday and the possibility of him potentially moving on in the summer. Now, it remains to be seen if Balogun and Suter will just keep their places from now until the end of the season. Do you see Connor coming back in at some point, Joshua? Do you think he comes in Sunday, or do you just keep the defence as is?
Well, obviously, Balogun kind of, he got out-muscled for the first, well, the only St Mirren goal,
He did, but for me, I mean, if Cyril Deso scores that goal, you're saying that's great centre-forward play, aren't you?
Yeah, true. The reason I raised that is that every time a defender makes a mistake, probably at Rangers, there'll be someone else that's the best defender. Yeah. And the reason that's the case is because there's probably not a standout at the moment. Now, Goldson has been in the past. I have a bit of a theory that not only because of the amount of games Goldson's played, but I think he is a better defender when he's isolated. I don't think he's as good a defender. And if you think back to when he's played his best football, which is under Gerrard, really, you know, in that narrow defensive structure where you're pretty defended well, the space in front of you is covered by someone like Stephen Davis, maybe not a defensive powerhouse, but he's a clever player who knows how to protect the defence, knows how to pick things off. Goldson, now more often than not, Rangers press man-to-man quite often. He's spoken about the increased running distances. And I think just over the last few months, he's looked like a player who's played that number of games. And it's a credit to him that he's not done so before that. And I think you need to give him a lot of credit for the player he has been at a lot of other times of his Rangers career. But I think until Rangers probably reinvest in that centre-back area, which obviously we've just spoken about with Ben Davies, they tried to do, but that hasn't worked. We will continue to have this conversation about what is the best partnership. Who's the best defender when there maybe isn't a clear outlier there. But again, the important thing to remember for me in this overall conversation is Rangers' defence at the start of the year looked so good because the team was functioning so well. Clermont hasn't been able to play two wingers since I think Rangers were away at Kilmarnock, the 2-1 win, which was at the end of February. What does that have to do with the defence? Well, it has to do with how they keep opponents penned back in their half, how the fullbacks play. The whole structure, I think, has changed quite a lot. And then when you consider that, that's why the defence has looked more vulnerable at points. Because at the start of the year, for about 6 to 8 games, it did look really good after it came back from the winter break, and that Rangers hardly conceded any goals in that time. I think I've said this stat before, but in the 6 games immediately after the winter break, Rangers conceded only 10 shots on target. Then the 6 games after that, they conceded 10 goals. Now, there was an Old Firm game within that, but it just goes to show that there really was that break in play from when the defence has started to suffer. When has that happened? That's happened when the wingers have got injured. That's happened when Ridvan's got injured and you've had to play Barisic at points who interprets that role differently. You've had to play people out of position, and that's had a knock-on effect. So maybe slightly hard to judge the defenders on that basis, but I'm in agreement probably with you and a lot of other people that it looks like an area that the Rangers will need to invest in come the summer.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Bill Story with the point says that we need dual pace from at least one of the centre-backs. Can we sign a natural left-sided centre-back with pace? And James Skeen with an interesting point. He says that do you think we miss Ryan Jack in front of the defence? Yes, that's an interesting one. The comment before saying, well, we see Connor Goldson in the Rangers jersey again. I don't know if we'll see Ryan Jack in the Rangers jersey again, Joshua. He is out of contract in the summer. We simply haven't seen enough of him.
Yeah.
unfortunately, due to injury. The manager did touch on it recently, didn't he, saying they want to get to the bottom of why he keeps breaking down. Is it a calf issue or something? It's something to do with his calf, isn't it?
Well, he went away. This is he actually played, four or five of Clermont's. He played quite often at the start of Clermont's, maybe back to October, November. He's basically out since then, since that international break. I believe he's now back in training. That was the message, I think, at last week's press conference. I don't think there's any doubt there that he's coming towards the end of his Rangers career. It'd be nice to see him, I'm sure, have some sort of send-off. He's a player, there's a little bit of a what-if, if not for injury, where could he have been? And maybe not just him individually, but he's a type of... I don't think he was ever the real leader in the Rangers midfield. Maybe towards the end of 2019, he was in that really good run of form. Where maybe he was the centre point, but he was always someone who allowed other people to play better. You know, Gerrard loved him, didn't he? And loved him for a reason. But Rangers, it's the same as Kemar Roofe. Rangers have had far too much money spent in the stands because of injury issues that they've not been able to get to the bottom of for a number of years. They've got quite a few players out of contract in the summer. A few more are probably going to leave on top of that, because you can't afford to have big earners continuously out through injury. And that has been... That's not only been the case over the last 3 years, but it's actually been the norm over the last 3 years. And obviously, that's something that Clermont will, I'm sure, aim to end come the summer with how he builds that squad.
Yep. The manager did say last week that both he and Ridvan will be back training well this week. So it remains to be seen if they will feature ahead of Sunday's game against Kilmarnock. I think Ridvan is a big one for me.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a short-term issue, and it's just dragged on. And on, would not be surprised to see Borna start at left back on Sunday again, Joshua. We've discussed this in videos before, just his dynamism and his forward thinking and his way of linking the play. Rangers have certainly missed that on that left hand side, haven't they?
They have massively, because again, he was probably Rangers' best individual before he got injured, Derek. You take Dujon Sterling out of a position where he might be more effective. I think he'll play at left back at the weekend. For me, he will. It will be Diomande and Lundstrom in the midfield, I think, for the next three or four games. That is what Clermont has done so far. I think he'll continue to do so. I'd like to see Sterling playing there with Diomande at some point. But Dujon Sterling has to play at left back otherwise for me, again, because of how it impacts the team structure otherwise. But yeah, Ridvan, on an individual basis, he's been a huge miss because of the way that he was creating chances from left back, because he can, you know, I think of that Hearts performance where, whether it was his positioning or whether it was the way he was crossing the ball from deep or carrying the ball, he has so many ways to kind of upset a defence, but also indirectly, the way that he can play inside and guard against counter-attacks, the way that he can then enable Dujon Sterling to play elsewhere, add much-needed legs to the left-hand side and ball-carrying ability, because that's something that I think Rangers really miss in this squad, outside of players like Sterling, and that's been one of the main differences. Under Clermont, he's tried to have more ball carriers within his team, but so many of them, whether it be Cortez or even Sima or McCausland, so many of them have been injured, and Ridvan is right up there as well. So he's been a huge miss, as you say, meant to be back in training this week. Injuries have been something that have bothered him since he came to the club. There was that whole discussion about when Barisic was being rotated in while Ridvan was fit, and people were saying, look, you need to play your strongest team every single time. This injury probably vindicates what Clermont has been doing otherwise, which is the fact that this squad is not ready for his style of football, to play every 3 to 5 days. Only a handful of players are. I know that injury came an international break. We'll see what happens at tomorrow's press conference. As you say, he was meant to be back in training this week. It's been one of these ones that's dragged on, a famous 8 to 10 days case at Rangers.
Yeah, it seemed to be cursed ever since, I think it's the Jordan Rossiter curse that every player suffers at Rangers. Stephen Gillespie with an interesting point. He says, if Ridvan is back, does PC rest Lunny and play Sterling at six? Would love to see that, buddy. However, I doubt it. I want to see Dujon, like Josh has said there, I want to see Dujon in the middle of that park. He offers legs and physicality in there. John Lundstrom is another, I think, looks like he's going to be moving on in the summertime. Aldo with a point says, I'd like to see a midfield three of Raskin, Diomande and Cantwell. Thoughts on that, Derek and Joshua? Well, unfortunately, Nico Raskin doesn't seem to be fancied by the manager, Joshua, so that's a major flaw with that one. On paper, yes. However, there's something not quite right there with Nico Raskin. It's a shame, really, because Rangers could be doing with him in the middle of that park.
Yeah, I definitely am someone who likes Raskin, Derek, and have been a bit confused. I think we spoke about this the other day as to some of the reasons that he might not be in and around it at the moment. I kind of hypothesized that if you look at the role that Diamandé's playing quite often, and you see it with the pass leading up to the goal on Sunday, don't you, the winning goal, quite often Lundstrom's the one that's moving out, and Diomande is obviously the player that's kind of conducting the play in the middle. He's the one who's seen most of the ball. But quite often Rangers then going directly into the front line, as you see with that pass for his pass into Tavernier, which led to Dessers cross. And Dowell and Lawrence are probably better passers over that range than Raskin. Maybe, I don't think that is a strength of Raskin's game. He's more someone who likes to carry the ball forward and drive with the ball, combine with players. And I think that's why he was such a suited profile for Buell's style of football. So perhaps that's why, that's the only reason that I have that role maybe becomes more of a not a quarterback is far too extreme an example for what I'm trying to say. But if you look at how Dowell and Lawrence have played off, and they're the ones that are getting the ball off the defence and then trying to spread it wide to the wingers who are playing behind. But I've been confused as well, because this time last year, he was the next big thing in the Rangers midfield, and at the moment he can't even get off the bench, so a confusing one.
Yeah, recently, last month, the manager addressed it. He said that Nico's been unlucky, started really well and played the first game after I was appointed and scored. He was one of our best players that day. Afterwards, he got an injury and was out for a longer time, and then there became more competition in the midfield. We have a lot of guys who did a lot of good things, and Nico's among them, with Lunny, the stable factor, all the time. Kieran Dill did good things in midfield. Tom Lawrence in the number eight role. Dio came in. Dujon Sterling did good things. So there's a lot of competition. It's not that Nico is doing things bad now or not good. No, he's working really hard. I see him evolving also. He's better than when I saw him in October. He is a better player, but there is more competition also. That's what you need in a top team to perform and to win a lot of games. So that is what the Rangers manager had to say about Nico Raskin a few weeks ago. Other bit of information in the news that I wanted to touch on, Joshua, you would have seen yesterday, the latest VAR incorrect calls, key match incidents. The SFA have shared statistics on the operation of VAR with the Scottish Premiership clubs on Wednesday, with detail on the major wrong decisions this term. It's 26 key match incidents that have reached the incorrect decision this season, up to the split. Now, there's 10 wrong decisions, recent wrong decisions that have been shared yesterday. Two involve Rangers. Now, the first one was at Rugby Park. It was the handball decision, of course, when Kilmarnock were awarded a penalty early on for the handball from John Lundstrom. Now, the detail says VAR should have recommended an on-field review. Final outcome should have been penalty decision, which led to Kilmarnock opening the scoring, overturned. No handball offence against Rangers. So, that I think we're all in agreement. That one shouldn't have been given. The other one is very interesting. The Rangers game against Aberdeen, when Rangers defeated Neil Warnock's side by 2-1. It said VAR intervention was correct, but final outcome should have been yellow card to Rangers' Dujon Sterling. Referee retained his on-field decision of a red card. And what makes this bewildering, Joshua, is the fact that Rangers appealed this decision and it was upheld. It was basically, it was kept as the original call by Don Robertson. What on earth is going on here?
Yeah, I remember being at the game, and I think the what went against Dujon Sterling on field was the pace at which he went into that challenge. But his foot was down, if memory serves me correctly. I've not watched the back since that news came out, Derek, but if memory serves me correctly, his foot was down. And it's very rare that you see a referee go over to a monitor when he's been encouraged to do so and not overturn his original decision. Obviously, that didn't lead to drop points for Rangers on the day, but Dujon Sterling did have a suspension. I think the Jose Cifuentes won way back in December against Dundee. That was an incorrect call as well, wasn't it? So, listen, all clubs are going to get a few of these. I think there's still teething issues, shall we say, with some of the implementation and just some of the decision-making in general. That is obviously always generally going to be the case. But yeah, I do remember being at that game and thinking, first time I saw it, that didn't look good. Seeing it back and thinking, okay, it'll be overturned because, as I mentioned, although he's went in with quite a lot of force, it looked as if he almost tried to pull out and his studs hadn't been high, he hadn't caught him high at the ankle. But yeah, interesting to see that yesterday. And the Lundstrom one again, similarly, I remember being at that game and the decision being made quite quickly. I know Derek McInnes was speaking about that yesterday, but it was the fact that he actually turned, as he turned, his arm was kind of in line with his body, wasn't it? So he didn't really make his body any bigger. And that could have been a big call, because for a long time in that first half and at the start of the second half, didn't look as though Rangers were going to find a way back in that game. They obviously did. It was a big win on the night. And yeah, the drop points have kind of arrived subsequently since that. So, yeah, interesting reading, as always, when these things come out.
Yeah, I seen a graph yesterday suggesting those calls have effectively cost Rangers 3 points. So, yeah, there's a lot of comments coming in about VAR. You've seen that Sweden have rejected it after the fans were up in arms about it, which good on them. I would scrap it tomorrow if I could. I don't think it's improved the game whatsoever. I'm sure there'll be many that disagree with that. Denzel,
that's it. Sorry, yeah. Derek, I was just going to say, I thought you were going to move on from VAR there, but the thing that I think that you can't scrap it personally, because technology is only going to become a bigger part of football. I think things like semi-automated offsides and what elements that make the decisions quicker need to happen. The big thing for me is being in a stadium, and I'm sure a lot of people will agree, you have no idea what's going on. So you see, even to go back to the recent Old Firm game, the spectator element of it needs to improve, because not only does it impact sometimes how people celebrate a goal, and you've always got that in the back of your mind. And I do think it takes away from an element of that because of the length of time it can take to decide if a goal is a goal. But there's little to no communication as to what is being reviewed, why it's being reviewed, when the review is over. Sometimes it goes up on the big screens, sometimes it doesn't. So I think for spectators, it really needs to improve, because in the moment, when you're in a stadium, whether you're working on a game and trying to tell people what's happening, often you don't really know. And when you're watching a game, I think what people often do is they're texting people who are watching the game at home saying, what has actually happened here and what are they reviewing? Because often you don't have a clue when you're at the game.
Yep. Just on that Kilmarnock one, Derek McInnes, as Joshua said, was speaking about it yesterday to Sky. Says that your former referees and current referees disagreeing on what should class as a penalty and whether an incident should be penalised with a penalty or not. It's clear as mud a lot of time with handball. The handball here on John Lundstrom, I thought initially it was clear as day his hand was up, but when you see it again, you can see why Rangers were disappointed the penalty was given. When the contact was made, his arm was in. It probably shouldn't have been a penalty. We've got to get better and clearer messaging with a lot of these issues, particularly the handball. So there you go, folks. We'll wrap up with this, Joshua. Of course, we're not in the transfer window just yet, but that's not stopped speculation and rumours rife that Rangers are chasing several players. One emerged yesterday, an Australian winger by the name of Rafael Borges Rodriguez. Wonderful name. Plays down under with a team called MacArthur in the A-League. Scored 6 goals and provided 2 assists in 32 appearances this season. It's also thought that Coventry and Watford are keen on him. He's 20 years old. Can't say I'm a big A-League aficionado and know too much about Australian football, Joshua, but a winger, certainly Rangers need to be looking at that position. Now, I've said it on record, I would be signing Oscar Cortez for next season. I've seen enough from him. I think that is one that I would be looking to bring in, but it's clear that Rangers need to get more width in that team. Do you agree?
I totally agree with you on Cortez. I know we've not seen much of him, but I think that for the price Rangers will have to pay for him, I think you would struggle to get a better winger at his age. I know we've not seen much, and when a player is out injured, or when you've seen him and he's not new, maybe the excitement goes down somewhat. But to me, in the small sample size we had of him, Derek, he looked pretty explosive. I'd have really liked to see him on the right-hand side with Seema on the left-hand side and options up top and maybe Todd Cantwell in behind, because I think that is the front four that Clement wanted to play once Seema was back fit. Obviously, now he's out again. But it's decision-making. I remember even his game against Ayr, and I'm not, you know, the quality of the opponent there isn't even what Cortez would face week in, week out. But if people think back to that performance, it was the variation of what he was doing. Quite often, I think with wingers, the thing that sets them apart is their decision-making, knowing when to take their man on, knowing when to not. I think Rabbi Matondo is a great example of this. Someone who's a good sub, and we saw in that Hibs game, in the Celtic game, clearly has individual quality, but often when he gets the ball, I don't think his decision making is great. Knowing when to keep the ball, knowing when to move inside, knowing when to vary his game, and how that variation, you know, moving into different positions to receive the ball, then helps you to beat your man in different moments. So I totally agree with you on Oscar Cortez. And outside of that, Rangers will still need to invest in wingers, because if there's any area that is, I think, defined the difference in Clermont's style of football to beforehand, it's been the wide areas. But this is why Rangers have needed to fix their recruitment and their squad building, because it's been so manager-centric up until now. And there's not been a figure over the top of that, which Niels Klopp now should be, that you get this kind of amalgamation of a squad of lots of different managers' influence, of lots of different styles of football. And it's why you then get Kieran Dowell and Tom Lawrence playing in positions they've never played before. It's why you get someone like Nico Raskin, who was the centre of Rangers midfield last year, now not in it at all. The only way that Rangers recruitment will have fewer sporadic wins is if they think beyond managers when they recruit, which now it seems like they say they're going to do. And I think the January recruitment, certainly with the signing of Diomande, who everyone I think can see is a player of real quality, addresses that. But the wide areas, they absolutely need to bring in more depth there, because that is a fundamental position to Clermont's style of football. If he doesn't have that, I think Rangers control play a lot less in the final thirds. It means they can't keep opponents penned back. It means they can't eject pace into their attack. Think back to the recent Old Firm game when you had a front four of players, and there was just, I know Scott Wright was in there, but outside of that, no real legs at all to run at players and commit players. And that's such a fundamental part of what Clermont wants to do, and impacts the structure behind it. So wingers will have to come in, and I agree with you. If I had my first pick, it would definitely be keeping Oscar Cortez around. What you would say is you want to see how the injury impacts him and affects him, but the fact that Clermont has referenced when he might come back suggests that hopefully he's responded to that relatively well.
Yep, absolutely. Right, folks, that will do us there. Thank you to each and every one of you for interacting with the show as ever. Those of you that are Ranger Review Extra members, we've got two videos coming your way today. Me and Joshua, we're going to delve into last night's Youth Cup final win in more detail. And I'll also be on with Adam Thornton at 1 p.m. this afternoon for our latest Q&A show. So please get your questions in and we'll answer as many of them as we possibly can. Just a reminder, that great piece from Chris Jack on John Souter is on the website. Do go and check it out. And we'll be back tomorrow as we look ahead to Sunday's must-win game. They all are, of course, against Kilmarnock at Ibrox. Until then, bye for now.